Welcome to This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and as always, joined tonight by my co-host, Roberto Rojas. And tonight, Mr. David Sakata, director from Diario Deportivo Digital, as we focus on debutantes Panama and their journey to the 2018 World Cup. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me tonight. David, I'd like to start out with you. I know you're in Panama City, I believe, tonight. But give us your tie to Panamanian football and your focus overall.
Good evening, guys. That is correct. I'm right here in Panama. I'm actually very close to one of the main arteries, so if you hear some honking and some beeping, that's just regular day, regular evening in Panama. Nothing wrong is going on. It's just regular Panamanians just honking on their cars. Well, I'm from here. This is where I was born. I'm Panamanian. I've been here for my whole life. Did study abroad, but everything that regards to the sport leads me back to Panama. I've been following the team, let's say, in the media level for a couple of years now. Started in 2011 with that Gold Cup run, which, if I'm not mistaken, ended up against U.S. as usual in Washington, D.C., maybe. I don't get the details quite right all the time. But, yeah, that's when it started for me, 2011. And ever since that day, I've been following the national team everywhere they go, covering the Panamanian national team in their quest to get to the World Cup, which we were able to do so recently, last October 10th, 2017, at Rommel Fernandez.
So, David, I just want to jump in. And, of course, you know, it's funny you mentioned the United States, because it seems like the United States will be a symbol, I guess, to Panama for quite some time, either in a negative way or in a positive. If we go back now 5 years ago, on October 15th, you know, the famous 3-2 win over Panama for the United States in Panama City that ended up in a Johansson last-minute goal that really, with a win for Panama, would have sent them to their first-ever World Cup in Brazil. Now you fast forward 4 years ago, and obviously, you know, I think many of us here, be it Joe, be it myself, and many neutrals who do follow CONCACAF, really didn't really expect Panama at the beginning to qualify for the World Cup directly, let alone even in the playoffs. So we fast forward to that game where they lost 4-0 to the United States in Orlando City. And obviously, you know, wrap it off in that dramatic 2-1 victory over Costa Rica 4 days later. I guess the question I want to set to you first is, you know, what was the vibe in Panama? I guess, firstly, before that game against Costa Rica, where many people, I think, considering that, you know, the big matchup that the United States had against Trinidad and Tobago and the big matchup that Mexico had with Honduras, not many people really expected Panama to be in that situation to go to the World Cup. So I just want to ask you first, that reaction beforehand and also afterwards, I'm imagining, you know, the joy of being the first ever World Cup appearance for this Panamanian side, you know. So what were the reactions on both the before and after of the qualifiers?
Yeah, well, we came back on that flight from Orlando not down, not necessarily beaten, but doubtful. We had a lot of doubts whether you know the math would give up on our side and make us get to the World Cup for the first time directly. That morning, most of us who follow the sport or the regular fans, they did wake up very early to catch that Australia game to see whether we had to play Australia. Talking about and you know that long way out to Australia and having them over here and you know just knowing that we could be closer than ever in our lives to get to a World Cup. The path got complicated once that 4-0 took us down in Orlando. It really did break some of the, you know, the emotions of the moment because I've spoken to Bolillo about that game, and he's told me that, Bolillo, the head coach of Panama national team, he's told me that there was a vibe in that day that he didn't agree with because people, meaning players, were very ecstatic and joyous about the game, thinking that this was going to be the game where not only they're going to beat the U.S. on their home soil in a qualifier for the first time ever, but that would actually lead us to a direct position to qualify. So it was a weird vibe that day that actually with that loss. And then on the way back, you know, there was so little time to react or to actually mourn that loss that the reaction was needed. And Costa Rica has always been a difficult foe in this instances. So, you know, it couldn't be more complicated to think that Trinidad and Tobago could do us a favor, not for us, but for themselves and beat the U.S. was kind of a long shot. So I would say that there was a lot of doubt in the air, whether a win by Trinidad and Tobago and then a win for us at the home soil because that has not been registered before. So I think that was the vibe in there. You know, what's going to happen tonight? Is it really going to be the game? We're in the media and we don't want to give you possibilities while we know that, you know, it's going to be complicated given the circumstances. But then after that, you know, first that goal that never made it through the goal line, and then Roman Torres' heartbreaker for the U.S., I could say, but obviously the one that broke the smiles and the laughter and the joy and the beer in the air and the stadium is going to be the one for the history. You know, the country was just crazy in the best way possible, to be said. People were on the streets. Happiness was all over. And then a couple of days later, it hit us. I mean, we're going to the World Cup. We're going to be facing the best teams in the world. We're probably going to be facing a top national team from one of the countries that we're used to seeing on TV. And for the first time ever, instead of, you know, having Panamanians root for Brazil, Argentina, Germany, Spain, or whatnot, it's going to be Panamanians rooting for Panama, rooting for the guys they see at Roman Fernandez every couple of months. And you know, the vibe has been excellent, has been great. World Cup is in your face here in Panama. Every single corner you see Roman Torres' face in an advertisement being sponsored by every type of company here. So everyone's gearing up for the World Cup. We celebrated that draw. We all of this has been, you know, part of a new experience that everyone is enjoying here in Panama.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think for any country, and obviously we have to tie that to Iceland, who made it to the World Cup for the first time ever. You know, it's a wonderful experience, and I'm sure I think the joy can be given to similar Panamanians or people from Iceland to qualify for the World Cup just because, you know, they realize, hey, well, we don't have to support all these big countries that we're accustomed to see every 4 years. You know, we can support us. We can support our country. And, you know, for a country that, you know, historically soccer or football isn't considered their strongest sport compared to maybe boxing or baseball as well. You know, that this ties into my next question. You know, obviously, I think this Panamanian side had potential. I mean, in the last four Gold Cups, in three of the last four Gold Cups, they either made the semifinals runners-up in 2013 and finished in third place for the Gold Cup. Was this going to be bound to happen? Did you feel like they did have the team to indeed qualify for the World Cup? Or what do you think this team had that was really special about them that got them to this instance?
I mean, in a great context, hindsight 2020, I mean, this was it. I mean, if you look back, the ages of our players, we know. We no one has to tell us about statistics, whether we are the youngest or the oldest. We know we're the oldest team playing the World Cup on average. We were the oldest team playing the Copa America Centenario in the U.S.
couple of years back, because this generation and the football structure here does not allow you to, you know, rejuvenate or bring the next generation up to the bad right next qualifying tournament. It doesn't happen like that here because the structure does not have the resources you find in the top countries, not only in the world, but in our region when compared to U.S., Mexico, or even Costa Rica. We're very distant from that. League structure, youth development structure, and every other aspect of a federation having to do their job in regards to bringing up the next guys, they'll take the team to the next level. It's hard here. It's very complicated. So right off the bat, you have to think that, I mean, there was not going to be a better chance for these guys to close the greatest generation of soccer players in Panama's history with the World Cup than this opportunity. The road got rough during instances. I was remembering just today that game in Trinidad and Tobago that we lost as well. Very hard place to play. A very, very confusing team. The emotions that get you confused, you underestimate those guys, and they beat you right out of it. So there was a lesson to be learned there for Panama. Fortunately for us, that was at the beginning of the qualifiers, not at the end. Where, you know, if you want to compare with you. Yes, I mean, it happened late in the qualifiers, and that might, you know, cost them the spot in Russia 2018. But this was it. There was not other way that it could have ended because these guys were not going to have a chance. And the disappointment of 2013 was still looming over many of these players. Even when the coach was not the same one, he knew exactly what had happened. And I've heard him say that at that game, at halftime, he told me directly, I told these guys a couple of words. The only thing I said directly to their faces was, are you going to let history repeat itself on you guys? Are you going to be the losers of Panama for ages and ages to come because you blew up two chances? Are you going to be those guys? So, you know, emotionally, they were there. Physically, we know that you know, we're not at the top of the league when it comes to the rest of the CONCACAF nations, let alone the World Cup. But you know, between emotions, the physicality, and the idea of this head coach, and obviously the inclusion of young players that came along the way, he was able to find the right formula to get the results. I'm not going to say that Panama played their best football during these qualifiers, but they did get the most important thing when it comes to a tournament like this, which was the results. And because of that, we're in a World Cup for the first time.
You bring up a great point, David, because I was looking at the results of the qualifying moving through. And of course, like you had said, they started out with that victory 1-0 over Honduras, but then they followed it up with a just as equally an impressive performance with a 0-0 draw against Mexico at home. So, you know, you're really on the right foot when you're at 4 points starting out in the first two matches of the Hex. But looking back at the overall qualification of the team, they only scored 9 goals in 10 qualifiers. They were shut out in 5 of their 10 matches, and their top goal scorers were a 31-year-old center back in Roman Torres and a 36-year-old striker in Blas Perez, who, granted, did spend 5 years of his career in MLS but has now moved on to the Guatemalan League. Moving into the World Cup, obviously with a tough group, you know, looking back at their qualification, what kind of things do you feel this team needs to fix to have any chance of competing in Russia next year or this year?
Well, there is going to be the issue of you know, the calendars, and this is something that affects everyone every time. I mean, the European leagues have not stopped for a single day. They'll stop for a couple of days before the World Cup is done, or before the Champions League final. While some of the players in the Panama national team have just played their first first official game of the 2018 season, just a week or a week, 2 weeks behind. So the beginning of the year is complicated for some of the guys. You know, substitute goalkeeper Joseph Calderon just played his first game of the 2018 year or season, whatever you want to call it, as a starter goalkeeper for a local team, Chorrillo FC, on the league last weekend. The league is into their fifth match day, so you can do the math how long he's been out of the game. So those are things that might worry some, because you know that USA and Belgium, which are on our same group, they have, you know, started, their players are under the top level. So how do we get to June with our players in their best form is probably the big question looming around Bolillo Gomez and the rest of the coaching staff. Fortunately enough, Federation has moved quickly, and we do have two important games in the March FIFA date, which will be against Denmark and Switzerland. So top European teams, probably compared to England and Belgium, and that'll give them the idea of where the team stands month or 2 months and a half before the World Cup. So I'll say that, you know, getting there physically in regards to, you know, their fitness is the most important thing right now, and probably the challenge that this team is going to face before the World Cup. I'm not expecting much more than, you know, these guys giving their all in the biggest stage of their lives, and probably it'll be the last time for most of them. So it's going to be a very competitive and very strong team, hopefully, that will be able to hold all these teams for the 90 minutes of gameplay and not give up physically before the game is over.
You know, David, just to look at the group now, and this is obviously in our next segment, obviously, I want to put a few numbers in, not to discount anything that Panama has been doing, but I just want to put some odds here real quick. According to Odds Checker, Panama are actually the lowest ranked team, or the lowest favorite, alongside Saudi Arabia, to win the whole World Cup. To win the group, they're, I believe, if I'm reading this right, yep, they're 40-1 compared to the 14-1 of Tunisia, the 6-5 in England, and the 5-6 in Belgium. So obviously, you know, it's going to be tough. And of course, you know, I think with any country heading into the World Cup for the first time ever, but of course, in this age of globalization compared to other World Cups, you know, I think many people give it the Belgian national team, the English national team, but the Tunisian national team will be able to understand the way it plays and how Panamanian football works. But obviously, you know, just jump into the group real quick. Their first game will be on the 18th against Belgium, followed by a really tough match against England, the powerhouse of the world, I would say, on the 24th. And then they finish it off on the 28th against Tunisia. I'll judge this to you first, David. You know, obviously, you know, I think we can make the comparison that Belgium and England will be the two toughest games for this Panamanian side. But if you had to pick one of them to be that tough game that Panama is facing, who is it? Or if by any chance you're going to put Tunisia in that, you know, would you put them? Or out of these three, which one do you think is the most toughest game that Panama will have in this World Cup?
Well, we can make a lot of work on researching as much as we can with Belgium and their players. National team coach Bolillo Gomez, they told me that he was impressed to know that Belgium is actually the most expensive national team in the World Cup. I haven't confirmed this data, but he, you know, he got the information on his own. All the players added up, they're very expensive. So he was like, okay, so there's a reason for these guys to be like, there's quality in their gameplay, so it's something you have to worry about. But there's a lot of research we can do on these guys because there's a lot of games that's been played. England, he's faced them before. He knows how complicated they are. It's funny because we can make that, you know, those anecdotes that show up, that probably show up at some point when the World Cup is up. Southgate, the national team coach for England, played against Bolillo's Colombia in the 98 World Cup. So, you know, I don't know if there's a relationship there, but, you know, there's a past somehow with Bolillo and England. England, I think, is going to be complicated. Tunisia comes into play for me for it being so exotic for us here. We don't get much information about the Tunisian football. We know very little of it. I'm sure that's the same thing happening in Tunisia with us. So I think that's a trick game because there isn't much information you can gather from them immediately as fast as you can from Belgium and England. You know how they play. You know who they are. You know all those players by name. You see in their faces. You identify immediately. Not the same thing happening with Tunisia. So I think it will be a tricky game with Tunisia being in the last game. Fortunately for Panama, that game is in the same place where they are doing their camps, which is in Saran. So that'll be like an advantage for Panama, which could also play into tricks saying, oh, it's going to be easy. We're going to be here. This is our house. Tunisia should be the easiest game on the group. So that's when it becomes tricky. I think that our game in the World Cup is against Tunisia. Belgium and England, you know who the favorites are in there. And you can only hope for a surprise, a big, big World Cup surprise, having Panama at least scratch a point out of those teams. But I think we're aiming at Tunisia to it being the game where we actually can, you know, have some goals being scored or even celebrate the 3 points if it's possible.
Yeah, no, I just want to jump to you real quick, Joe. Obviously, you know, this is a World Cup, and, you know, the unexpected can happen to anyone. I mean, you saw Senegal in 2002 beat the world champions France in that World Cup. You saw many surprises. When New Zealand tied the world champions Italy, yep. You know, when all those type of things. So, Joe, I mean, you know, if you had to pick one game for this Panamanian side, you know, do you feel that there could be a surprise in any of them, maybe against England or Belgium, or do you feel the same of what David is saying?
No, I do agree with what David is saying, but I looking at this list, there actually is a for me, a possible upset game that we could see. And I think that if we do see this game become an upset, I think England will never want to play a CONCACAF team in the World Cup again. And that's England-Panama. You know, England, for as great as they are, does have the potential from time and time again to lay out a stinker. And you know, if they're not focused, which I don't think they will be focused on Panama, because you've got to remember, in a few days' time, they're going to be facing off against Belgium, really, for the top spot in the group, as many would anticipate. So there, I think there's an opportunity there for Panama to possibly take advantage of a team that might be sleeping on them, and looking forward to the Belgium match. I do think that, like you said, David, that the Tunisia match, I think, is the best opportunity for Panama to maybe earn some points, maybe showcase to the world, hey, we're not the last team, you know, of the 32. We can even if we were the last team, we can still provide some nice attacking football and something that you can remember. But I think the England matchup, because of the position of the matchup in comparison to what England has as the next opponent, I think could really pose some problems, especially if they tend to overlook Panama. And we've seen teams that overlook Panama. We've seen Mexico draw 0-0 with them. We saw Panama beat Costa Rica to get into the World Cup on the last day. If you overlook Panama, you're going to be in trouble, and I think there's potential for that here.
If you want to go into logistics, Panama, as I said, will be staying in Saransk. That game against England is in Nizhny Novgorod. England, if I'm not mistaken, will do their camps in St. Petersburg. So the distance from St. Pete all the way to Nizhny, in comparison to Panama going from Saransk to Nizhny, there's a big difference there. In Russia is so big. The country is so big that distances are going to be considered. Everything has to go mostly through Moscow. So Panama will have a logistic advantage there from when you talk about the distance they have to travel from Saransk to Nizhny in comparison to going from St. Pete to Nizhny.
Okay. Well, let's look at this, because you bring up travel, which leads me to my next topic or my next segment, and that's the players to watch in this tournament. And I started to look at the squads that were lined up, you know, the players that were lined up for Panama. But on average, Panama is actually the oldest team at the World Cup, and according to FIFA's information that they've published, 29.4 years of age is the average age for the Panamanian national team. And when you look up and down the list, we look at Luis Tejeda, who's currently playing in Peru, 35 years old, the tied for the top active goal scorer in Panamanian history with 43 goals. We already mentioned Blas Perez at 36 years old, playing in Guatemala for Municipal. Again, Blas and Luis Tejeda are both tied for most goals scored actively under the Panamanian national team in their history. We look at Roman Torres, who must have a million streets named after him in Panama at this point for that goal. But he's 31 years old, and really just starting to get into the middle of his MLS season there with the Seattle Sounders. And then you also look at a guy like Jaime Pinedo, who's currently playing over at Dinamo Bucharest, previously at the LA Galaxy. But even Jaime Pinedo is 36 years old. You wonder about the durability of this team going forward. So my question to you, Dave, is not so much to point out the old players or the aging players that are on the Panamanian squad. I'd like to hear from you, as a young player, who do you feel is a young player on this team that can maybe shine, maybe help this team, but also maybe earn himself a step into MLS or Liga MX, or even over into Europe and maybe end up somewhere over there?
I mean, when it comes to the older players, the veterans, the old guys, we actually, they get to call them like that every now and then on the newspaper, and they actually, you know, enjoy that for a while now. You mentioned these names. You have to add Felipe Baloy to that equation, who had a very good time with Mexican football in Liga MX. He's also playing Municipal with Blas Perez. So, and Gabriel Gomez, who plays in Bucaramanga, also a former MLSer with Philadelphia Union. He's playing in Colombian League. Those guys, all those guys you mentioned, except for Roman Torres, they're expected to retire after the World Cup. But obviously the question pops up, so what's next? But you have guys like Edgar Bárcenas, who plays in Ascenso MX, the second tier Liga MX. You have guys like Murillo, Michael Amir Murillo, who's a defender for New Red Bulls. You have a guy like Fidel Escobar, also their defender in that league. There's a name like Howard Cummings, which is a defender for San Jose Earthquakes. Obviously, there's Aníbal Godoy, Alberto Quintero, who plays for Peruvian Universitario. So you have a lot of names right there. I mean, the leaders of these teams have been the guys that you mentioned earlier. But you have guys that will come up eventually, and they are bound to be the guys who lead the team to their success past Russia 2018. I could even mention Armando Cooper, who was a champion last season with Toronto FC, even though he saw his playing time, you know, reduced with the inclusion of new midfielders to that Canadian side. There's many other names who are already in Europe, but not as known as these other guys. You have a guy called Pepe Avila. This kid, he's playing in Genk in Belgium, and there's a high chance that even when he did not make the qualifier team, he did make this last friendlies that were played in Europe, and there is a high chance that we see him play the World Cup in the midfield position. So the names are there. It will be a matter of leadership. That's what this team, when the big guys, the old guys aren't there, has been lacking. A leadership role, someone that really has the authority, like Roman Torres, like Blas Perez, like Jaime Penedo. This is what you might have been missing, and hopefully you'll find that or develop that when the World Cup comes.
Last question on the players before I turn it back over to Rob. We're all assuming Jaime Pinedo is going to be the goalkeeper for this team, 128 caps for the national team. But there is Jose Calderon, who's playing over at Marathon in Honduras, 29 caps to his credit. Is there a chance Calderon edges out Pinedo in this one and takes over that spot, or is it definitely Jaime Pinedo and everyone else is second place?
Highly unlikely. Only in the course of an injury or a suspension, but it's highly unlikely that someone not named Jaime Pinedo has the responsibility of being Panama's goalkeeper at the World Cup. Joseph Calderon, he did finish Marathon last season, but as I mentioned, he's back in Panama. He's playing for Chorrillo. He is the current goalkeeper for that team, and I don't know if that will affect his chances of, you know, even being considered for the starting position. I have to assume that he's going to fight for that spot, but we all concur here in Panama that it's going to be Jaime Pinedo's place, regardless of who else is behind him.
So, David, I just want to jump in and obviously look at predictions. You know, it would be very hard to predict what Panama will do in this World Cup, being the big surprise, I think, for many of them, be it the English fans, the Belgian fans, or the Tunisian fans. But, you know, I just want to ask you, and obviously for those who are listening who are maybe from England or from Belgium or from Tunisia as well, you know, what is there to expect from this Panamanian side that, you know, that these nations have to look out for when they're playing them? And also, if you can, you know, can you give a starting lineup a starting lineup of the Panamanian national team for this World Cup, if you had to choose?
Yes, expect a surprise. That's how I'll go. I mean, there's nothing left to lose. I mean, there's a lot to be gained here in this World Cup. The mentality of the players has been for many years now to get to this stage, to get to this level, even if they took a little bit more to get, you know, in their preparations for in pre-seasons and all that, I have no doubt that they'll be overcome the challenge of the physical and the fitness that coach is expecting from them when the World Cup comes. So I'm expecting something surprising, you know, people saying, I never thought Panama was able to do something like this, because we've surprised the region. This is the best chance to surprise the world, right? So that I'll stay with that. I can't define it if it's beating someone. I don't know how to define it, but I'm expecting people to become surprised with Panama and the way they play football. So I'll start with Jaime Pinedo in the goalkeeper position. On the left side, I have Luis Carlos Olaye, central defenders. It has to be Roman Torres and Fidel Escobar. On the other side, it would probably be Mike Amir Murillo for the first game. Up front, middle of the field, it has to be Godoy, Aníbal Godoy, and Gabriel Gavilán Gómez in the center of that field. To the left, you will have Alberto Quintero. On the other side, you have Edgar Bárcenas. And up front, playing a 4-4-2 position, which is the one that they play the most, Gabriel Torres, former Colorado Rapids fan, and Blas Perez. That's the most common lineup that Bolillo has used in his time with the Panama team.
Okay. Now, you know, closing out our segment on Panama, one of the questions that we always ask is what would a World Cup mean to Panama? So I will definitely go there and ask you that, because for me, I do feel that with Panama's entrance into this World Cup for the first time in their history, many of the celebrations have been phenomenal. You were mentioning about the horns honking behind you. Some of us may think that they're still celebrating getting in. but obviously, you know, a World Cup victory in their first try would be something that many would determine, you know, would consider to be unfathomable. Something you just would almost, you don't want to say impossible, but improbable. So I do want to, go ahead.
You know, it's something that doesn't happen.
Right, exactly. So my question to you is, you know, what is a successful World Cup look like for Panama? Is it something where they get a victory and 3 points in one of these matches? Is it advancing to the knockout stages? What would be successful for Panama in this World Cup?
I mean, this is going to be a lesson. This is going to be a very important lesson for everything, every aspect of football, soccer here in Panama. It is going to be, yeah, you did say the word celebration, and it's going to be a celebration of the career of many players that they've been through the best moments, and obviously that one dark moment, 2013, when we lost that chance to get to a playoff, and all the Gold Cups in between. It's going to be something bigger than I assume we can all think of right now, because I mentioned a couple of minutes before that we're used to being either supporters of other nations or just spectators, and hardly ever, you know, be a participant in this phenomenon, 4-year phenomenon, this is the World Cup. So there's a lot to be drawn out of here. I mean, the Federation is learning how things are done. It's learning how to relate themselves at the highest level possible when it comes to events like this. We had a great experience with the Copa America Centenario in 2016. Even when we were used to go to US and play every other summer, or every summer actually, Copa America was something different from seeing Brazil get prepared in the same place where we were and how they were doing things to face Argentina and have Messi come off the bench and, you know, just lap around the whole national team and win that game for his country, to actually being part of the whole World Cup scenario. I was able to be present at the draw in Russia in December, and right there, I mean, you could see the difference. Have people from the BBC ask me what was Panama and why do they play football here. Guys from Belgium saying, "Oh, we've seen a lot of things from you in our travel network. So I know there's a lot of beaches, and I know there's a lot of things I never knew you guys had soccer." So all of those things are coming into play. So I mean, it's hard. And other countries that are looking forward to, you know, have a great and outstanding performance. I remember, you know, that Belgium-US game a couple of years ago when Tim Howard, you know, was just revered by everyone. And some people didn't even know he was playing in Premier League football. So things like that, I think, are what are at stake for Panama. You know, actually being able to show, represent, and be part of the showcase of the best football in the world. And just having that opportunity, having them earn that opportunity, is going to be a celebration for everyone.
Absolutely. David Sakata, director of Diario Deportivo Digital in Panama, and Mr. Roberto Rojas, I want to thank both of you for joining me tonight to break down Debutantes Panama and their quest for World Cup glory 2018 in Russia this year. So for This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network, I'm your host, Joe Uccello. Thanks for listening, and good night.